Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, November 6th, 2021. Section A. Pension Board calls for forensic audit by Stuart Doreen. Texas Pension Review Board states in an intensive actuarial review that the Midland Firefighters Relief and Retirement Fund is currently projected to run out of assets in 22 years. And during a meeting last week in Austin, one board member said that the plan could be out of business in 10 to 12 years, and that's assuming we don't have a bear market. The Texas Pension Review Board shared concerns during the meeting and the review about the Midland Firemen's Relief and Retirement Fund and its board investment, governance, and transparency practices. At the meeting, it was said that the production and presentation of a review was 6 months in the making and not without obstacles, specifically multiple comments from board officials about having difficulty getting information from the Relief and Retirement Fund board and staff members. At the same time, the Retirement Fund, also referred to as Midland Fire in the report, officials, specifically longtime board member David Stacy, told TPRB board members that there was more to the story than what the TPRB's report showed, that Midland Fire was doing what it had to do over the last decade to accomplish the things we needed, and while the MFRRF board agreed to actions being proposed in the study, including a forensic audit of the relief fund, he didn't expect they would show me anything that I did not already know. An examination of the executive summary of the Texas Review Board actuarial review shows that the forensic audit should include a reconstruction of investment performance, fees, compliance review, and risk assessment to provide a solid foundation to create a funding soundness restoration plan and monitor progress. They should also conduct a governance audit to review best practices and increase transparency of board operations. The review of pensions across the state was a legislature initiative, and the Texas Pension Review Board stated it intended to assist Midland Fire's Board of Trustees and the City of Midland with assessing the fund's ability to meet its long-term pension obligations, according to the actuarial review. The board encourages the fund and city to review the findings and conclusions of this report and jointly adopt a forward-looking plan to address these issues. The PRB can provide technical assistance in formulating the plan. In the overview of the intensive actuarial review, the board states the Midland Firefighters Relief is currently projected to run out of assets in 22 years. Under the key findings part of the report, it states the Midland Fire faces many serious issues ranging from limited to no investment governance, inconsistent and insufficient investment performance, and large unexpected increases in benefit payments. All of these factors increase the risk the fund will run out of money in as little as 10 to 12 years. The report also included five key findings. Midland Fire lacks fundamental governance practices to administer its investment program, including portfolio monitoring and defining roles and responsibilities. Transparency and accuracy concerns with Midland Fire's investment program limit members' and stakeholders' abilities to evaluate their benefit security. Over the last decade, the fund's investments have underperformed their assumed rate of return by more than 2%. Among the highest in the state, Midland Fire's investment expenses have grown considerably since 2013, and the fund has no fee monitoring process. Midland Fire's asset allocation appears to be poor for their size and liability constraint. Midland Fire faces significant risk of near-term exhaustion. Between 2000 and 2019, the fund went from a stable fund ratio of 93.7% to 51.1%, according to the review. Investment underperformance was the primary contributor to an increase in unfunded actuarial accrued liability. Since investments have underperformed their assumed rate of return of 7.5% by more than 2%, only achieving a 10-year compounded return of 5.1%. Despite a strong bull market during the same period, inadequate contributions and assumption changes also exacerbated the increase since the reliance on investment returns to pay benefits increases as the funded ratio declines, which compounds the negative effects of the underperforming assets. The Midland Fireman's Relief and Retirement Fund is there for firefighters as they don't pay into Social Security, it was said during the review board. There are five members of the board as listed on the website: Brian McCary, Stacy, James Martin, Mayor Patrick Payton, and Mark Mason, the city's new director of finance. It was stated by Payton and Stacy at the meeting that the two city officials did not have much experience with board activities. Payton told the Pension Review Board he received phone calls a couple of months ago about the severity of the urgent situation we're seeing today. Payton and City Manager Robert Patrick both told the board they are committed to doing everything from the city's side to making sure the pension fund works. Patrick told Reporter Telegram that the city can help in one of the five key findings and that measures already have been put in place or committed. They include raising the city's contribution rate to the pension from 21.7% to 22.2%. I believe it is shown in the review that the contribution rate, along with that of our firemen, are above average to other peer pension funds. So that portion of it doesn't appear to be the largest issue with the fund. Patrick said the city also has offered recently to help pay for consulting services or actuarial services and with other administrative costs to help get this resolved. We're committed to our firemen, Patrick said. We're committed to make sure that this pension fund works, and we're looking forward to the future. The Reporter Telegram reached out Friday for additional comments about the intensive actuarial review and this week's meeting with the Pension Review Board. An official responded to the board wanted to engage with the Reporter Telegram at a future date because of our long-standing history with the Pension Review Board and our ongoing commitment to work with the City of Midland. It was during Stacy's comments to the board that it became apparent that he and the Pension Review Board were not on the same page. Stacy, who was first elected to the Midland Firemen's Board, didn't share their concerns about the board's move to an endowment model. He believed the fund had provided ample documentation about its meetings and discussions about investment policy. He also did not share the concerns of the Pension Review Board on investment strategy, including the amount invested in real estate. Stacy added that informal meetings had been held with members and there was documentation to address many concerns the Pension Review Board had. He told the Pension Review Board members that their report did not take into account the cylindrical nature of the oil industry in Midland, which forced the city to pay more overtime and cost of living adjustments to firefighters that weren't experienced elsewhere. Stacy said he was optimistic that the review board can work with the city to correct funding issues, adjust the benefit structure, and ultimately that would help reduce the likelihood of a chance for this to occur in the future. He also said he would take Payton and Patrick at their word that they will act in good faith and they intend to do what needs to be done. Trial delayed until Monday, by Caitlin Randall. The murder trial for David Wilson, who has been charged in connection with the death of Midland police officer Nathan Heidelberg, has been delayed until Monday afternoon. Opening statements were expected to begin Friday following 4 days of jury selection. The trial is now expected to continue at 1 p.m. Monday on the 10th floor of the Midland County Courthouse. Here's what to know from the week of jury selection before the trial begins Monday. Wilson was re-indicted on a murder charge on October 28th after being indicted for manslaughter in May 2019. Assistant District Attorney Timothy Flathers told the Reporter-Telegram that Wilson was able to be re-indicted because the state presented a new legal theory. The defense had the option to request more time but chose to go forward with the trial this week. The date that Wilson was re-indicted will likely be used as part of the defense's argument. The defense team requested on Thursday, when Wilson's indictment was read before the court, that the date of the indictment be stated for the record. District Attorney Lauren Odoff argued that the date wasn't necessary for the jury to understand the charges against Wilson, but Judge George Gillis allowed the date of the indictment to be read in open court. A jury panel was selected Thursday afternoon, consisting of 9 women and 5 men, 13 of whom are white and 1 is Hispanic. Jury selection lasted so long because more than 700 Midland County residents were summoned for duty, the most in the history of the county, and about 420 residents appeared for jury duty on Monday. The pool was narrowed down to 150 jurors through a jury questionnaire. Then the defense and state each had 10 strikes they could use before the final 12 jurors and 2 alternates were selected. Part of the state's argument is expected to include that Wilson committed felony deadly conduct when he shot and killed Heidelberg while police responded to a burglar call at Wilson's home. In Texas, an individual can be charged with murder if a person is killed while they're committing another felony. State prosecutors told potential jurors that a person can be convicted of murder regardless if the jury agrees on how the murder occurred. For example, if some jurors believe a murder was intentional or some believe it occurred while the defendant was carrying out a felony, a jury can still reach a unanimous conviction. The Castle Doctrine will more than likely play a role in the trial. Texas has some of the strongest Castle Doctrine laws in the country, as defense attorneys stated this week, which presume that deadly force is a reasonable response to protect one's home from a potential threat. Texas law also requires that someone be in fear of unlawful entry when implementing the Castle Doctrine and not in fear of their life. The prosecution has the option to call about a dozen law enforcement officers to testify, including Police Chief Seth Herman. The defense has listed an expert witness to testify on the accuracy of the police body camera footage, as well as subpoenaed employees from Wilson's home alarm company. The defense previously filed a brief that claimed Wilson's alarm malfunctioned on the day the police officer was killed, and employees at the alarm company alerted the police of a potential burglar alarm, although the system had not been armed. Abbott announces legal action against OSHA vaccine mandate by Mella McEwen. Though midterm elections are a year away, Governor Abbott said the road to Republican success begins in Midland. Addressing the Ronald Reagan dinner presented by the Midland chapter of the Republican National Hispanic Assembly at the Barber and George H.W. Bush Convention Center, the governor highlighted the common values held by Republicans and the Hispanic community. The values of the Hispanic community, faith, family, and friends, permeate the Republican Party, said Abbott, who is seeking a third term next year. He added that going into the 2022 elections, the party will contrast those of the Democratic Party, which he painted as socialists, trying to redesign the U.S. in their vision of socialism and impose that vision on the U.S. and the Hispanic community. He declared, "We will not allow that in this state or any other state in the U.S. To tremendous cheers from his audience, Abbott announced the state has filed a lawsuit challenging the OSHA emergency standard issued Thursday, mandating that companies with 100 or more employees implement the COVID vaccine or regular testing and masking requirements. He defended the state's new voter laws, saying the legislation was aimed at halting illegal voting and cheating. He said the new laws actually extended the time to vote and made voting easier. It just made it hard to cheat. The two main sources of cheating are mail-in ballots and ballot harvesting. So mail-in ballots now not only require a signature, but the driver's license or social security number of the voter. The new laws are also criminalized third-party submission of ballots, making it a third-degree felony. He highlighted actions taken during the most 87th legislative session this year. A law banning the teaching of critical race theory in Texas schools. The theory categorizes people based on race and skin color and pits them against each other, he said, and is contrary to not only teaching that in America everyone is equal, but the teachings of Martin Luther King Jr. Balance the state budget with additional taxes and with billions in additional funds. Reformed property taxes, and that's only the beginning of what we're doing. Thanks to the revenues flowing to the state from Permian Basin oil and gas fields, he said the state will be devoting at least $5 billion to further reduce property taxes as a permanent solution to drive down property taxes as sought. Passed a law preventing social media companies from deplatforming conservative voices. Signed 7 laws on gun rights, including constitutional carry and declaring Texas a Second Amendment sanctuary state. Passed a law outlawing abortion after the heartbeat is determined, usually after about 6 weeks. Passed a law that would defund any city that moved to defund its police departments. In Texas, we support our law enforcement officials, period. Just passed a constitutional amendment barring the closure of churches for any reason, a reaction to closing of public places, including churches, last year amid the COVID pandemic. The governor also highlighted action aimed at border security, including deploying 7,500 officers, Department of Public Safety troopers, and National Guard among them, and earmarking $3 billion to secure the border. If the federal government won't secure the border, Texas will step up and do the job the federal government will not do. He also said $1 billion has been raised to build a border wall, with construction set to begin by the end of the year. Keep Midland Beautiful partnered with Diamondback Energy in the city Friday to celebrate Texas Arbor Day and plant 45 trees at Dunnigan Park in South Midland. Their work brought the number of planted trees this year to 80, according to Keep Midland Beautiful. Diamondback Energy pledged to plant 100 trees in Midland before the year ends. 20 pine trees will complete the pledge when planted in December, also at Dunnigan Park. Midland man dies in crash. A 36-year-old Midlander died Wednesday morning in a crash west of Andrews. DPS reported that around 9:45 a.m. Wednesday, Rodrigo Espinosa Reese was driving a 2005 Ford F-150 southbound on FM 181. It was at the intersection of 181 and State Highway 176 that Reese failed to yield and was struck by a 2006 Peterbilt truck tractor. DPS reported that the collision caused the truck tractor and towed unit to roll onto its top and lose its load. At Point, a 2017 Freightliner truck tractor was struck by the Peterbilt's load. A justice of the peace pronounced Espinosa dead. The accident occurred 12 miles west of Andrews. HEB shares more than 9,000 holiday meals during feast. HEB celebrated the holiday season Friday in Midland by distributing more than 9,000 holiday meals as part of its annual HEB Feast of Sharing celebration. In partnership with West Texas Food Bank, HEB employees, along with community volunteers, passed out holiday meals, bags of fruits, vegetables and other food items, and toys and other festive goodies. An annual tradition, this year's HEB Feast of Sharing did not include the traditional in-person dinner events and volunteer opportunities. Instead, HEB is committed to donating more than 340,000 meals to support hunger relief efforts in Texas and Mexico this holiday season. In Texas, HEB will make monetary and food donations to 18 Texas food banks and more than 45 hunger relief agencies. Industry speaks out on changes since 2019. speakers at this week's Heart Energy Executive Oil Conference had their thoughts on how the industry has transformed since the conference was last held in person in November 2019. With $80 oil and $5 natural gas, margins have changed, and companies can do things now that didn't make sense in 2019. As margins have changed, companies need their teams to be able to make adjustments. Getting a quote on a rig, we found the rig rate has moved from $17,000 in the summer to $24,000 and will probably be $27,000 next year. Tubulars are up 30% if you can find them. The dilemma for small companies is how much inventory should you keep? How do you build up the frac spreads you need to keep going? The cost structure for this year is out the window for next year. If we had formed Black Knight with our business model prior to 2020, there wouldn't have been much to look at. Most respondents to our survey expected their borrowing basis to increase 10 to 20%. Interestingly, more borrowers than lenders felt their borrowing base would not change. Next year, most producers expect to source their capital from cash flow, followed by debt from banks. The greatest bellwether for optimism in the industry is when it thinks the equity markets will reopen. Most respondents say the third or fourth quarter of 2022, closely followed by the first or second quarter. ConocoPhillips has given $2 million to Midland organizations in 2021, supporting over 50 organizations. The company currently has 550 employees in Midland, growing to 600 to 700 with the Shell acquisition. The number of private companies have tripled drilling activity, filling the massive gap left by Permian Co., the Permian-focused public companies. The private companies are taking the risks. AAA pump prices up 21 cents in last month by Stuart Doreen. The average price of gas in Midland has increased 21 cents in the last month, according to AAA Texas. The organization showed a price of $2.96 in Midland in early October. This week, it reported an average of $3.17, the second largest average of any larger metropolitan area in the state. El Paso again led all larger areas. Its $3.36 average was 5 cents less, but still ahead of Midland and Odessa. AAA Texas reported 1 cent increases in both Midland and Odessa. Drivers in Texas are paying the third lowest gas price average in the country. Rig count reaches highest level since April by Mel McEwen. After several weeks of inching higher or taking a step back, drilling activity revved up in the first week of November. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes and data analytics firm Enverus said Friday the U.S. rig count rose by 6 to 550, the highest level since April 2020. Texas added 4 rigs for 254 for the week. The Permian Basin continues to employ about half of the nation's rigs, with 271 at work within the region. Several speakers at this week's Heart Energy Oil Conference reported plans to step up drilling activity. Caleb Weatherill, president of Stronghold Energy, said that after redeveloping a number of existing wells, the company is about to drill a new well on a PJ Lee lease with plans to drill 19 vertical new wells by next March. Andrew Limbacher of Venture Energy said the company plans to grow by the drill bit, running 2 rigs. Ann Sams of Midland passed away on November 1st. The family is planning a private memorial. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Michael Bridge passed away November 3rd. Viewing will be Sunday from 1 o'clock to 9 o'clock, November 7th, at Gilbreth Funeral Home in Stanton. Graveside service will be held at 2 p.m. Monday at Evergreen Cemetery in Stanton. Arrangements are under the direction of the Gilbreth Funeral Home in Stanton. Ralph Dunson, Sr. of Midland, passed away on Friday, October 29th. Visitation will be Friday, November 5th, at the Jackie Warren Funeral Home, services will be Saturday, November 6th at 11 a.m. at Greater New Hope Baptist Church in Midland. Interment to follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Daniel Dominguez of Midland passed away on Thursday, November 4th. Viewing will be Saturday, November 6th from 10 to 9 p.m. with a Christian prayer service at 5 and Sunday, November 7th from 10 to 9 with a rosary to be recited at 7 at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service is Monday, November 8th at 2 p.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine. Robert Bob Perry Knox of Midland passed away on Thursday, November 4th. Celebration of life will be held on Tuesday, November 9th at 11 a.m. at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Rodrigo Alejandro Espinoza passed away on November 3rd. Viewing will be Saturday, November 6th from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. and Sunday from 10 to 9 p.m. at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. A rosary will be recited Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass is set for Monday at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Saturday, November 6th. School of Nursing Looks to Expand by Ruth Campbell. University of Texas Permian Basin's School of Nursing is growing, finding success in national testing and looking for imaginative ways to help students learn during the time of COVID-19. Donna Buick, Dean for the College of Health Sciences and Human Performance, has administrative oversight for the nursing program. There are currently 99 students enrolled. We have 40 seats per semester, so that means that we can admit 40 students into the actual nursing program each fall, each spring, so that would be 160 total. We do not run at full capacity at the moment, Buick said. There are enough instructors to teach the students currently, but there is one open position that the university is conducting a national search for. And then as we plan to expand beginning next fall, we have a request out to the Board of Nursing to do a 25% increase in our enrollment per semester. Once we do that, then we'll seek additional faculty loans to accommodate that. We also use part-time faculty, which is very common in nursing. A lot of people call those individuals adjuncts. We call them part-time. We use part-time faculty in the clinical settings. We use part-time faculty in the theory didactic area based on their experience and credentials, Buick said. When they get approval to expand, she said they will be able to accept 50 students per semester. That would increase them to a total of 200 circulating within the nursing program itself, she added. She noted that the College of Nursing is expanding the scope of where it recruits students. We're moving all the way out into the Permian Basin, Buick said. Recently, the new director of experiential learning and simulation, Denise Dunn, has visited Pecos, Fort Stockton, Scenic Mountain Medical Center in Big Spring, and Crane. She's gone out to various other outreach hospitals and has plans to go all the way into Hobbs, New Mexico, to their medical center. Our goal is to be able to send our students out their senior semester and to truly embed them into their community to do their practicum in population health, leadership, and their acute care into the area. So hopefully they'll feed back into those community hospitals, Buick said. From what she's read in non-science-based literature and heard from professional organizations, COVID has prompted some people to stay away from nursing while others are drawn to it. The pandemic has really impacted healthcare delivery tremendously. The pandemic has really highlighted the wear and tear on providers. Nurses are leaving the profession, retiring early. Providers, advanced practice nurses, physicians, they're retiring. They're leaving for multiple reasons. And so we're in a very critical stage of how we're going to continue to supply the healthcare needs across the nation. There has been a nursing shortage for decades, and the pandemic has added to it. I was in a state meeting just a couple of weeks ago with several of the other deans and directors from professional programs across Texas, and this was one of our main conversations, was how are we going to move forward with this? Because even though we may get the applications from very well-qualified students, we don't have the clinical sites to put students into their rotations. And a lot of it's because we don't have the providers at the clinical sites to give it. And also we don't have the clinical sites because people are having to reduce their bed capacity because of the nurses, Buick said. One of the things UTPB is doing is a survey within the Permian Basin to see how many nurses clinical sites are using in terms of federal and traveling nurses, how many open positions they currently have, how many retirements they are anticipating in the next 5 years, and has their capacity been limited because of these issues? Because I think if we can answer those questions, then that can help us to be able to figure out what type of strategies we're going to use to help alleviate some of those strains on the profession moving forward, Buick said. We want to be very strategic in where we're placing our students and help the organizations and institutions' clinics, not just hospitals, but clinics and just all the different healthcare needs, but to be very strategic so that not one specific area is left without having some type of service provided to it, she added. Finding instructors was another matter discussed at the state meeting Buick attended. Other areas are having that. Fortunately, we are not there right now. We have a very strong supply of our clinical part-time faculty. We have a steady faculty within our School of Nursing. Again, we do have one open position with the anticipation that we will need two additional faculty. I think because of the reputation of UT Permian Basin and the School of Nursing, that we do not have difficulty recruiting faculty. We don't have difficulty retaining our faculty. We have strong partnerships with our clinical partners, and when we need an additional clinical faculty, our clinical leadership helps us to find that. So we have such a good relationship with our academic clinical partners that we don't seem to have issues that maybe other schools of nursing or colleges of nursing have, Buick said. The most recent cohort graduates have been taking their NCLEX, the National Council Licensure Examination, since their graduation in spring 2021. With a 91.9% first attempt pass rate, the cohort surpassed the national first attempt pass rate average of 85.3%. They also surpassed the state average, which is currently 91%. Associate Dean and Professor Minerva Gonzalez said she is very excited and incredibly proud of their team. "And I'm proud of our students," Buick said. "We set the bar, and they knew the bar was there, and they worked extremely hard to reach it. I think some of them even set the challenge themselves that they would supersede the class before them." Buick said the secret to the high pass rate is multifaceted. "Whenever I came in 2019, we did an overview, and I say we, the faculty, really took on and looked at the new essentials set out by AACN, which is our mothership of accreditation, and then we looked at AACN essentials. We looked at the Texas Board of Nursing DACs, and we realigned the curriculum to match those. We also looked at the student demographics that we have and what the needs were for coaching and retention. And as a faculty, we worked collaboratively with the students, fully embedded ATI resources across the curriculum. ATI is the testing assessment program that we utilize, which is very common across nursing programs. With that, we saw right away a little over a 9% increase between last year and this year. We saw an increase during the pandemic when 30% of the programs across the state saw a decrease in their NCLEX pass rates," Buick said. During the pandemic, most of the hospitals and clinics where students had their experiential learning shut down. This was when we would have thought as educators that our clinical partners would have wanted to expose students to that. But because the pandemic and COVID-19 virus was so new, no one really knew what to do with healthcare students, nursing in particular, And so, where our hospitals closed units to us, we were very fortunate to have Dr. Gonzalez as a leader in our School of Nursing, because she took the lead to put our students in the community and to address emergency management and community services. So where our students would have typically gone to a virtual learning, they continued to have hands-on and connected to continuing their learning in that aspect. With the health department, with the city, EMS, they connected with Texas Tech Medicine residency fees. They didn't have a lapse in their experiential learning, and I attribute a lot of the success and the increase in our pass rates to them being able to continue that experiential, hands-on learning, Buke said. Gonzalez said students were involved in the vaccine clinic that the city stood up several weeks ago. We did it for 3 weeks, and then the city decided that they would suspend the vaccine clinic, Gonzalez said. Gonzalez taught nurses in their first semester to graduating seniors about the chain of command, how to organize when a disaster hits, and the basics of administering a shot, Buke said. It's much more than just the actual tactic of administering it. It's the management that a baccalaureate-level nurse does. I think that's where we make such a greater impact on our students, she added. Gonzalez agreed. This particular setting, especially in a vaccine clinic like the city had, gives them a very different perspective because you're dealing with the elements. You're dealing with a few unknowns. In a hospital setting, it's a little more controlled. You've got all of your supplies there. You have pretty much everything you need. When you're in a park, which is where we were, you're really having to consider all of those external factors that you would not have to consider before, Gonzalez said. At day's end, the students talked about what they saw, what they wouldn't have seen in a hospital setting or within four walls. The first day, Gonzalez said, the wind was blowing hard, and they had to make sure their supplies stayed clean and everything stayed sterile. In the region, Buke said, they don't have the baccalaureate programs that UTPB has, but the clinical facilities are unique because students get to experience a wide range of things from serving as an emergency room nurse to a medical surgical nurse to a nurse that cares for geriatric patients. Gonzalez said she started her career at a community hospital in Littlefield that was licensed for 34 beds, so they delivered babies and she bounced from department to department. Buke said this is important for the School of Nursing because that learning experience goes beyond what the university could supply in the simulation center or any type of controlled clinical experience. We want to make sure that no matter where our graduates go to practice, that they are very well-rounded and that they're able and very capable and competent to take care of the patient population, because we know that America has an aging population. We know that the patients that we see in the hospital today, whether it's an urban, metropolitan, or community hospital, are sicker than they were a decade ago, 2 decades ago, Buke said. We have to prepare our graduates to the highest level of competency possible, she added. Gonzalez said they know more about diseases now than they did 3 decades ago. It's really interesting. A concept like sepsis, for instance, we would keep a patient in the hospital with pneumonia. That can be treated outpatient now. But what they look for, though, is if that patient starts to run a high fever, things that might be leading to sepsis. Those are the kinds of patients that you see right now. We just know so much more about the disease processes, Gonzalez said. Buke said there is a shortage of healthcare providers at the physician and advanced practice level. The baccalaureate prepared nurse in the rural and community area has to be able to have those skills at a much higher level now than what they may have had years previously. That's another reason why we're reaching out and expanding their learning opportunities, Buke said. Abbott Campaigns in Midland by Ruth Campbell. Highlights of recent legislative session, a lawsuit filed by Texas against the federal government's vaccine mandate for companies, and a bill signing were just some of the items covered by Governor Greg Abbott at the Republican National Hispanic Assembly Midland Chapter's Reagan Lunch, held Friday at the Bush Convention Center in Midland and organized by the RNHA. It drew a full house that included elected officials from Odessa and Midland. Shelby Landgraf was the MC. Abbott said Midland Mayor Patrick Payton's message to him, paraphrasing, was to continue giving the federal government hell. Abbott said the Biden administration issued an executive order through OSHA mandating that businesses in the United States compel their employees to get vaccines. Abbott said Texas has filed a lawsuit challenging the constitutionality. It is wrong fundamentally, but also wrong legally, for the federal government to mandate that anybody put into their body a drug required by the federal government. We will not tolerate that in Texas, Abbott said. Abbott said the values of the Hispanic community and the Republican Party are faith, family, and freedom. That's why we united all together, all races under that banner of faith, family, and freedom, he said. And it's those values that will ensure that we're going to win elections in 2022, Abbott said. In running, Abbott said they will contrast the values of the Republican Party and the principles that they run on versus the values and principles on which the Democrats run. And candidly, it's never been easier than it is now. And the reason is because we used to be that we were running against Democrats, and that's what they used to call themselves. Then they were liberals, and then they were progressives, and now they are who they tell you they are. They are socialists, Abbott said. We are running against socialists who are trying to redesign the United States of America into their vision of socialism and trying to impose it on the United States of America and on the Hispanic community, and we will not allow that in the Lone Star State or any state in the United States of America, he added. Abbott said you see socialism creep up in many different ways. One of the ways that was prolific in the elections that took place this past Tuesday, there was the backlash that occurred in Virginia. It revolves around this whole concept of critical race theory. Critical race theory is antagonistic to the United States of America. It is antagonistic to the teachings of Martin Luther King Jr. It categorizes people on the basis of race, on the color of their skin, and then it pits those people against each other, he said. Abbott said this is contrary to the United States Creed, which is one nation under God, with everybody being equal. But it is also contrary to King's teachings, where he said, we're to be judged not by the color of our skin, but by the content of our character. And because critical race theory is both so antagonistic to the United States of America, antagonistic to the state of Texas, but also because it's dangerous the way that it is being used to indoctrinate our children. That is exactly why Texas passed a law that I signed to ensure that in every grade and every subject that Texas schools, we have banned critical race theory, Abbott said. He contended that most of the money in the Build Back Better bill in Congress is going to redesign the United States of America and redistribute the money in the United States to create more socialism in this country. And they wrap it in your candy-coated words, such as they want to give opportunity to everybody in this country, or they want to provide everybody the opportunity to escape poverty. Well, let me tell you something that these progressive socialists will not tell you. It is capitalism, not socialism, but capitalism in the United States of America that has lifted more people out of poverty and helped people have more opportunities than all of the socialistic programs combined. And we will not allow the socialists to destroy what capitalism has created in the United States or in the Lone Star State, Abbott said. Abbott said the legislature also passed property tax reforms. The constitutional amendment election included a provision that churches will never be closed for any reason during a pandemic or any other time. Your ability to worship Almighty God should never be limited, should never be closed. Your First Amendment freedom of religion is now protected by law in the Lone Star State, he said. Staying with the First Amendment, Abbott said a law was passed during the session that makes it illegal for conservative voices to be deplatformed by large social media companies like Google, Facebook, and Twitter. 7 gun laws also were passed, including making Texas a constitutional carry state, and also a law that makes Texas a Second Amendment sanctuary state, prohibiting the Biden administration from coming into Texas and taking your guns. He highlighted the recent bill that prohibits abortion after about 6 weeks of pregnancy, when a heartbeat can be detected, and signed a law to ensure that a city that defunds the police will be defunded. On border security, Abbott said the state is using $3 billion to secure the border and immigration laws will be fully enforced. The state of Texas will step up and do the job the federal government is supposed to do, he said. Right now, Abbott said, there are more than 7,500 National Guard or Texas Department of Public Safety officers preparing to secure the border in ways that will protect against those caravans from coming to Texas and coming across the border. He said officers are laying razor wire and putting up blockades to keep undocumented immigrants out. In addition, he said, those officers are going to do everything humanly possible to ensure that Texas is stepping up to secure our border. And yes, Texas is building its own border wall to better secure the state of Texas. The border wall project has already begun. We've dedicated about $1 trillion to it. Donations are received from people who want to support the border walls at borderwall.texas.gov. If you want to provide more money to build a border wall, Abbott said. But we have over $1 billion available to us now to build the border wall. Abbott said construction will start before the end of the calendar year. An election integrity law was also passed during the session. The federal government has filed a lawsuit challenging the legality of the state's election integrity laws. That is a lawsuit in which they're going to lose badly. Our law will be upheld by the federal courts, Abbott said. The law cracks down on mass mailing of mail-in ballots and ballot harvesting. He said it also provides more early voting hours. He added that it looks like Democrat Beto O'Rourke wants to run for governor. He said O'Rourke is one of the architects of the socialistic vision. He's the one who wants to come and take your guns. He's the one who is for open border policies. He's the one who is advancing every liberal socialistic ideology policy. He was advocating defunding the police. We can't allow that to happen in Texas, Abbott said. Abbott also signed Daniels' law. He said Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, was the lead advocate for the bill. Abbott said Kathleen Kerwin Haney's brother, Daniel, suffered from kidney failure for much of his life, but was denied the chance at a kidney transplant because he also had Down syndrome. Abbott said Daniel passed away in 2015 as a result of kidney failure. Daniel's law prohibits discrimination against a potential organ donor recipient based upon a person's disability. Daniel may have lost his life, but Daniel leaves a legacy of ensuring that what happened to him will never happen again, Abbott said. He added that the law is an example of how a citizen of Texas can create change. Speaking at the Friday event, Kerwin Haney said her brother was active, engaging, vibrant, a lover of life, and joyous. She said Daniel loved his family and he loved Midland. But a lot of people didn't know he suffered from almost 2 decades from kidney disease, and he had no hope at a transplant to live because simply he was Down syndrome. And I remember toward the end of his battle, he was trying to console me. And he said, Kathleen, Kathleen, look, it's okay, me, me. And I know at that point he was okay. He was in the arms of our Lord. But I also came to realize it's not okay, that he didn't have a fair chance at life. And so I'm grateful for Representative Landgraf. I took this idea for this piece of legislation, and he promised me it would be a better day in Texas for special needs who were struggling. And he followed through. He filed this bill in November of last year, and Governor Abbott signed in May. September 1st, it went into effect. Now Daniel is no longer with us, but his legacy will live forever through this law to improve the lives of special needs people in Texas. But it's not time to rest. This road is long, and my dad always called me the trail boss. So we got to keep our sleeves rolled up, and we need to advocate for our most vulnerable, Kerwin Haney said. Quick hits. Graffiti removal. Keep Odessa Beautiful is asking the community to report illegal graffiti at tinyurl.com/4m2de3aw. The Odessa Downtown Lions Club will work to get it removed. Paint donations and volunteers are also needed. To donate, volunteer, or for more information, call 432-335-4686. Email kob@odessa-tx.gov or visit keepodessabeautiful.org. Veterans Week of Events. The University of Texas Permian Basin, 4901 East University Boulevard, will celebrate and honor veterans Monday through Thursday. Monday, 12 p.m. to 1 p.m., Warriors Lunch for Veterans at the Residence Dining Hall. Tuesday, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m., War Authors, Short Readings and Discussion at the Student Activity Center, upstairs in the Fishbowl. Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., Veterans Health Fair and Pro Bono Legal Clinic at D. Kirk Edwards Family Human Performance Building. Thursday, 9:30 a.m., Veterans Day Ceremony at the UTPB Gym, followed by free lunch for veterans at the dining hall. Visit utpb.edu. Live tour. Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market, 1788, Midland, has scheduled Blue October at 7:30 p.m. Wednesday. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. For tickets or information, visit wagnernoll.com. OC to host Honors Luncheon. The Odessa College will host the 14th Annual Odessa College Honors Luncheon, celebrating those who have made a difference in education in our community, at 11:30 a.m. on Tuesday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. The public is invited, and tickets for the event are available for purchase at tinyurl.com/YAK44PhD. The following individuals and organizations will be honored for their impact in education: Dr. Rohith Saravanan, Community Impact; Lisa Wyman, Outstanding Individual; Julie Marshall, Outstanding Educator; La Margarita, Outstanding Business; Medical Center Hospital, Outstanding Nonprofit; the Wood Family and Virginia Chisholm Hall of Fame inductees; renowned education advocate Jeffrey Canada, founder of the Harlem Children's Zone, who became nationally recognized for his pioneering work helping children and families in Harlem, and as a passionate advocate for education reform, will be the featured speaker at the luncheon. Synergy ready to host Clifford the Big Red Dog. Synergy is hosting a Clifford the Big Red Dog breakfast event on November 13th. The event is $14.99 and will include a meet and greet with Clifford, a French toast breakfast, a $5 game card, and a ticket to the 9:30 a.m. Clifford the Big Red Dog showing. The next weekend, November 20th, they will host their monthly sensory-friendly screening. This month's movie will be Clifford. The screening will consist of brightened lights, lowered volume, and space for children to move throughout the auditorium. The showing is free and aims to help families of children with sensory sensitivities enjoy going to the movies. The annual Thanksgiving food drive also began November 4th and runs through November 28th. So far with the help of the community, they have donated over 5 tons of food, and they hope to set a new record this year. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Saturday. Alan Reinhard Veal was born on September 6, 1949, to Joseph and Doris Veal in Fairfield, California. He is preceded in death by his parents, grandmother Moselle Rains, grandfather Jimmy Logan, brothers Terry and Michael Veal, brother-in-law William Rush, sister-in-law Sally Garcia, and grandson Samuel Rodriguez. He is survived by his wife of 44 years, Elodia Veal, daughter and son-in-law Amina and Patrick Teeler, son and daughter-in-law Tyrone and Marcia Adams, son and daughter-in-law Fonzel and Iseda Veal, son and daughter-in-law Marcel and Quincia Veal, sister Patricia Veal Rush, sister Janetta Veal, sister Michelle Veal, brother and sister-in-law Joseph and Dolly Veal, brothers Roger Veal, brother Ivory Veal, brother Robert Veal, 16 grandchildren, 3 great-grandchildren, and numerous cousins, nieces, and nephews. Viewing will be held on Monday, November 8th from 9 a.m. to 10:45 a.m. at Bethlehem Baptist Church in Odessa, followed by a home-going celebration at 11 a.m. with Reverend Darren Willis officiating. In lieu of flowers, please make a contribution to Bethlehem Baptist Church in the name of Alan Reinhard Veal. Expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.odessafuneralhome.com for the Veal family. Steve Ray Chavez, 43, of Odessa, died Wednesday, November 3rd, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. November 8th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Preston W. Valley, 73, died Monday, November 1st, in Monahans. Services are pending with Harkey Funeral Home of Monahans.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.